The Football Show on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. Join the Save Our Shirt movement today. More at saveourshirt.co.uk.
I'm prepared to do anything I can to make my country again.
Do it then. What about your start to the game?
I was, it wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
And you're very welcome along to the Football Show. It's been a busy show. That theme continues this evening on the Football Show. We will bring you later on Gary Breen in conversation with Stephen Doyle. They were at the North London Derby yesterday. They talk about that and also preview Ireland's game against the Swiss on Thursday. And to that end, Seamus Coleman on the show as well. He was speaking to Nathan Murphy yesterday. We had the Everton Wolves game. Nathan caught up with Seamus Coleman afterwards. They talk about the game itself, about Ireland-Switzerland and about Matt Doherty as well, who didn't feature for Wolves and won't feature for Ireland on Thursday. So that is all to come. But first, Pat and Evan, a very good evening.
Good evening to you. How are you doing?
Very well, very well. And yourself?
I'm very good, very good. I'm speaking to you from a new computer, and I'm still trying to work it out here. Okay. It'll get better, okay. I promise.
Well, you're a touch echoey, but we'll manage, and as you said, it will get better. I presume you're feeling cock-a-hoop after the Old Firm win?
It was really interesting game. I mean, we want basically Scottish football to be interesting, and it might have made it a wee bit more interesting had Rangers got something out of the game, but you know, Neil Lennon, after getting a lot of stick, you know, with the European exploits or, you know, failures, really, he needed something. He needed something from that game. And with only 800 supporters there at Ibrox, that is a hell of a good result for them. And considering there's so many new players that were playing for Celtic on the day, that's a big, big, big one for them.
Mm. We kept an extra eye as well because Johnny Hayes scored, Republic of Ireland international as well. How's he looking?
I'm really wary of starting with any big decisions about any player, you know, in a couple of games, and particularly Old Firm games as well. Hmm. I mean, the goal was a bit scruffy, you know, near the end it was okay, but, you know, if you score, you know, in an Old Firm game and it's your first, you know, goal in an Old Firm game, it gives you a massive, massive lift. And it was just not a part of the game where Rangers were trying really hard to get back into it. Hmm. But they don't look absolutely brilliant yet. But then against Celtic, they look, you know, quite an average-looking side at the moment. Certainly for Scottish football, they're still favourites again. And Steven Gerrard's got to do something to change that. He made some changes later on in the game, Gerrard, but it wasn't really enough. And they didn't look like a top-quality side. You know, it's going to be between the two of them again, without a shadow of a doubt. And it still looks like Celtic. Each time they've brought somebody in, their buys have been a wee bit better than the Rangers' buys, and that's the way it looks.
Okay. Well, lots going on, Pat, so I'm going to machine gun some stuff at you from the weekend in no particular order. We'll start with the North London Derby, Arsenal 2, Spurs 2. Gary Breen, later on, was at the game. I'm sure you'll talk in a bit of depth about various bits and bobs and the general flow of it. Just a few specifics within that. For instance, Granit Xhaka gives away a penalty again. So Granit Xhaka is top of the tree here when it comes to this. He gave away 9 fouls in the game yesterday, including the penalty. So since he joined Arsenal in August 2016, no player has given away more penalties in the Premier League than Granit Xhaka. So we're talking 5 across 3 seasons. I get the Paul Scholes accidental wink, wink, nod, nod, on purpose tackle and how that might play with referees quite nicely sometimes. But when you're giving away a penalty that often, there is something at the heart of that. There is a crucial lack of composure at the key moment or something. I don't know what it is. You'll have played with players who had this tendency as well. Xhaka is definitely one of them.
Yeah, they're kind of over-desperate with their tackles. It's match intelligence as much as anything else. In simple terms, you do not dive in the box unless you're 100% sure. Now, everyone now in a game will get it wrong. That's what happens. If you get it wrong regularly, I thought the one at the weekend was really poor. There's no need to dive in the way he dived in there. Positionally, he wasn't right at all. It shows a naivety, you know, and there's a bit of you that thinks, yeah, people who want to make tackles, you can applaud them for it, but you know when to do it and you should know when not to do it. And Xhaka's, it's quite clear, if you've got, I mean, I remember playing myself, there's certain guys, you try and put in a position so they made a tackle and you're thinking, well, if I can nick the ball away, I'm going to get a hit. And that's a part of Xhaka's game, isn't it? He's kind of trying to hit the ball and he's trying to get a bit of you as well. And you need to change that. You can do that outside the box. You try doing that inside the box. players are usually clever enough to move the ball slightly and quite quickly out of your way. Mm. And Jack is just, he's just too, you know, and that's the problem that Arsenal seem to have. A couple of liabilities. We talked about David Luiz last week, you know, and David, when he's a little bit excitable, that's a real danger as well. Mm. And you can't do that. But we know players like that. A number of players, you know, across the leagues are a bit like that. We watched Zuma in the first game for Chelsea against Manchester United. Mm. I mean, exactly the same thing. You don't make that challenge. You stay on your feet. The old phrase in the game, stay on your feet, there's money in the game. I.e. calm down a little bit when it comes to the big the big moments. And he doesn't do it. And it's, you know, eventually you do it too often and then you'll just get hoofed.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a number of other players in that game I think actually played really quite well and, you know, quite impressed by them. But certainly in that one, you do it too often, you've got a real problem.
Yeah. Because when he first arrived at Arsenal, there was much talk about the fact that he had the record number of red cards or yellow cards in the Bundesliga, and people anticipated somebody who would put a bit of steel back into Arsenal. This might be just what they need. But actually, as you said, you used the word liability. He seems to be more of a liability than anything without that kind of steel that maybe people had hoped for in that sense.
Yeah, no, he gives you that as well, though, doesn't he? I mean, there's plenty of times he's done that. And it kind of almost goes unnoticed because, okay, you've added that little bit, you know, and they've got, you know, Kolasinac, who can throw a bit of a tackle in as well. So they needed a little bit of that. And you wouldn't want to take that away for the game. But it's intelligence to do it in the right places. Mm. I mean, clever players do it in the right places. I mean,
and can we assume that if he, you know, he's still doing this all these years later, that ship has sailed for him?
I would suspect so. Yeah. I mean, some players, I mean, you often talk about centre-backs. They don't really mature until 27, 28, 29, and those sort of errors get ironed out of their game. I mean, all players make those sort of errors frequently. You just notice it more when it's centre-backs or when it's somebody doing it in the box. Mm. That's why you see centre-backs doing it. You talk about it all the time. Well, there's plenty of midfielders doing it all over the place. They do it all the time. It's just you don't do that in the box, and you need to learn that. And that's why you look at the centre-backs, particularly in the deep-lying midfielders, they learn that quickly. And if they don't learn that quickly, they pay for it.
So I presume over at Spurs today, they unplugged all the phones and knocked off the Wi-Fi and told Christian Eriksen to take the day off and go and relax somewhere. The European transfer window's come and gone. So it looks like Eriksen's going to stay. And he started, obviously, yesterday. This dynamic of a player running down his contract, there is an unsigned contract in front of him. It seems he has no intention really of signing it, or he would have done by now. His heart seems genuinely to be set on Real Madrid or Barcelona or beyond. So that dynamic of a player very deliberately and pretty much openly running down their contract, is that a problematic one in any great sense for Spurs this year?
It's a problem for lots of teams over the years. I mean, when Bosman originally came in, everybody knew that was the thing. You know, if you've got a choice, that's one of the reasons why wages exploded as well.
Sure.
Because if you didn't make that decision to get the player on board, you know he's going to run it out and you're going to get nothing at the end of it,
or
very little at the end of it. So they know that. I mean, Sanchez did it, didn't he? And he walks away and he gets a massive payday and the ball is his backside to kick a ball again. And, you know, I don't think Eriksen will be like that. But from his position, you don't take it from the club's position. You understand what their position is. They're in a really horrible space. They think, well, what can we do about this? We either let them go and we don't want to let them go and we've no replacement and we'll look like, you know, if we have a nightmare season, people will say, oh, you should have kept him. But then they'll get no money for him. Mm. They've made a decision, you know, to stick by him, and it may well do that they change it in January and try and get something there. But it's a limited amount. It's a part of the deal. It's one of the hardest things to do in football, to be able to run that and organise that in such a way. And if players absolutely dead set in it, he just uses the rules to suit himself. And there's plenty of players out there that say, look, I am my own company and I'll make sure I run the company to the best possible financial success. And that's the way to do it. And he's in a great position for himself, because you know that Real Madrid will probably be there for him next time when he wants to go.
Yeah, I suppose I should have said, when is this problematic for Spurs? Obviously, for their financial department, it's massively problematic. Is it a problem for Pochettino? Does he have any qualms about playing this guy, using this guy all season? Like, the incentive is clearly there for Eriksen to play well. So, like, it's not going to affect team morale. It's not going to irk the... You know, is it going to become a thing with the fans? Probably not if he's playing reasonably well. Like, there's no reason Pochettino isn't going to use this guy right across the season and milk him for all he can.
It's just personality, isn't it? It's absolutely personality. You tried that with Sanchez and he'll be injured half the time. You know, there's some that are like that. They just, you know, the personalities. I mean, from the outside, you can see the personality. he looks all right, doesn't he? Yeah. He's going to be fine. Eriksen will do it. So you, I don't think that is even a slight concern with Eriksen. I think you will get a good player for the period of time. There is a slight difficult rate at the end of running down a contract that they don't want to get himself injured. And they might be earning 30 million quid for the next move. You know, I can see that that might even happen with the most moral of players. Mm. But Eriksen, it's as little a problem as it is with anybody. I think you use him and you use him as much as possible. Hey, if you don't, that's bizarre. Because you've just lost a massive possibility, a transfer fee.
Yeah.
You've got to use him.
It doesn't seem like the right move for me. If they got, I mean, 60, 70 million, I presume, would have been going for Eriksen. They should have taken that, no?
Maybe, but, you know, say they haven't got enough. I mean, I'm being devil's advocate.
Yeah.
To be honest, you look at the Hazard one with Chelsea, it was a classic one. They had to take it. It was running the dead. He did no choice. You know, but others have said, no, we'll stick it out. Sometimes they've got a wee belief in the back of their mind that they might change the player's mind and give them this massive contract. But, I mean, you can't give him a contract that's going to get that sort of, you know, money. Because he knows that when he goes to Real Madrid now, he says, right, okay, you're getting me for free. I would have cost you 50 million. So I want, you know, 25, 30, 40, whatever million. You know, you're in a brilliant position there. Their situation, as we all know, is, you know, if you sell Eriksen now, it's out with the British transfer window, or English transfer window, you're stuffed. And he is that important. And if he gets you Champions League football this season, which is a fair chance he might, it's probably, you know, arguably just about the right deal. Because I don't think they'll get Champions League football without him.
Okay, well, I guess that sort of settles it. I'm hesitant to class the next question as on as regarding the Harry Kane dive, but as a working title, we might just go with that. So the Harry Kane way of winning penalties, where he kind of leans across and slows up and takes the hit and goes down, kind of something similar across 2-3 weeks now. Is he diving? Is it smart play? Is he kind of positioning his body in the right way? What's he doing here from your point of view?
I wouldn't give a penalty. Absolutely would not give a penalty for that. I'm probably quite old school. The amount of people that say that phrase to you, oh, there's contact.
Yeah,
but who contacted who? I mean, that's really the problem. Actually, there was a bigger one. The other one that we're going on about, the Villa one with Grealish. Now, he got a little tap in his leg. I don't know if you'd... I watched it in slow motion about 8 times. I just wanted to see this because I wouldn't give it. And I've come out... Once again, I'm in a minority of one. Mm. You watch it, there's a little clip, but he takes another 2 steps and then throws his left leg out. For me, that's simulation. And simulation is what we try to get rid of in the game. Mm. So Harry and others, they're doing it all the time now. Now, that's just the way the game is just now, and they're trying to be ultra clever about it. Mm. I have a suspicion if it wasn't Harry Kane, there would be a lot more stick going thrown about towards it. There's certain players that, if they do that, they get absolutely hammered for it. You name them, you know, the Madisons of this world, they do it, and you go bananas at it now because you've seen them do it before. They'll keep on doing it. But when it's obvious, I just hope the officials go back and give them the yellow cards and things like that, and that might stop it. It won't stop it, but I'm not seeing quite as much as I've seen of it before. It's there now and again.
Yeah.
And the fact that they're not getting too many penalties out of it,
yeah,
that's the positive. That's the, all right, we better try and stay on our feet now. Because maybe in those occasions, if they stayed on your feet, you may have got a goal. You never know.
Well, Kane, for his part, says he made a tired tackle. I think if I'm on the halfway line, I get it. Which is always the last kind of resort of somebody when they don't get a penalty.
Look, there's a really grey area, right? So I'm no holier than thou. If I went past a player, I would get in front of him, slow down, take the hit.
Okay.
I'll take the hit. But I'm getting the hit. I'm not leaning into you and I don't throw my body towards you, then my legs are collapsing.
Yeah.
I get in front of you, then I wait for the hit. That's a penalty.
So he's not even waiting for the hit.
That's where I draw my lines.
Yeah, okay, fair point. As for the game, generally, like much of the talk around Arsenal centres on them working their front three into the starting lineup, which they tried to do. And then Spurs, if you look at their calendar year, and I appreciate the back end of last season did include an unbelievable Champions League run, but if you include their domestic calendar year, it's really not very impressive. So what did you make of the game? Where are these two for you at the moment?
I suppose I'm looking at them too. And you see, a lot of the time you watch it and you're looking for the weaknesses, aren't you? A few of the other teams around them, you're seeing a hell of a lot of strengths still. I still think you're seeing a lot of strengths. You look at the people around them, you look at the United, Man United, Chelsea's, whatever, you're still seeing a lot of strengths there. There's a lot of goals in both of those teams. I'll tell you that. It's not, I mean, a scary amount of goals. Yeah, there are weaknesses defensively, but you look around it now. Are there weaknesses defensively at Man City? Actually, there probably are. You know, and that's part of the deal now. A lot of teams, and I applaud them all for it, right? If we're going to spend the money, the real money is going to be up front in the attacking midfield. And I think a lot of them are, they're not ignoring the defensive side of it, but, you know, that's not where the absolute focus is.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you will find, I think you'll find weaknesses in both of those sides. Does that make them unlikely to be top four? No, I don't think it does. I think that makes them likely to keep on scoring a lot of goals than just about anyone else, and that'll be enough to get top four.
You've given me the perfect segue there when you mentioned Man City and defensive weaknesses. So the Laporte injury, according to Guardiola, doesn't look good. So how significant is this? I mean, is he generally considered their, about their best defender? And who steps in? Like, is John Stones' time coming? Because it needs to come pretty soon, you suspect. So there's Stones, there's Otamendi, and then floating around, I guess, in a Mascherano-esque way, you have the likes of, well, Fernandinho jumps to mind, or maybe even Kyle Walker. How does Pep play this if Laporte is out for the next kind of 6 months, and how important is he?
He's fairly important, but I don't go overboard with it. I mean, there's a good line. I think it was Jimmy Janis might have said, some couple of people have said it. Yeah, that might make the difference between first and second.
Yeah.
You might have a point there. Actually, there might be something in there. Because, but in reality, if you look at the percentages of most games that Manchester City play, although it wasn't the case at the weekend, but if you look at percentages of possession and the amount of time they spend in their own half defending, hell of a limited. Then you don't actually have to do as much defending when you've got all for 75-80% of the game, which they do, particularly at home, in a lot of the games. So will it affect them in the, against most of the rest of the teams in the league? No, I don't think it will. I really don't think it will.
Really?
Will it affect them against Liverpool? Or maybe push, you know, Arsenal? But it's probably just Liverpool as much as anyone else. I still think there's enough in that team. You could bring in your Stones and you might lose one more goal every three or four games than you would have with him. Is that going to make a difference when you're scoring 15? I doubt it. I don't think so.
Where are you and John Stones?
Disappointed, really.
Oh, yeah.
I just thought he would be the control of it for years and years.
Yeah.
And when Guardiola first really let him out, just part of last season, I just thought that was his time. He was just about to walk into it. And I was kind of really confused about it, you know, and he's using others before him all the time. And although he looks like the perfect type of player, he is the perfect defender in some ways for him because he plays out with the ball, he's comfortable on the ball, all that sort of stuff. He's defending, you know, so-so. It's okay. It's not terrible. It's not brilliant. You know, it's just he's a decent enough defender. But obviously Pep's just looked at it and thought for the past year or so, no, you've not come on as quickly. Because he looked like the golden boy, didn't he?
Yeah.
He looked like the Pep's son for a while.
Yeah.
It'll be that it's the arm around the shoulder now. Hey, you were my best mate all along. I've got belief that he can walk in and do it. He's still quite young, John Stone. He's still getting on, and I think it'll be fine. I wouldn't be panic stricken, but I wouldn't want to, if I was City, I wouldn't want to lose another centre back. That's just really.
Yeah, true. Interestingly, Pep was saying they actually couldn't afford to sign another centre half. They did want to. Financial fair play maybe is having some effect there. I don't know how genuine he's been in that.
Well, good.
Yeah,
so, because you're that far ahead of everybody else. And it's, there's no sympathy there. I mean, if you've got, you know, Bernardo Silva and David Silva and De Bruyne and, you know, Mahrez and, well, Mane's gone there, of course, but Mahrez, but you've got Aguero up front. You've got unbelievable options up front, more than everybody else. Man. So it's your choice.
Yeah.
You know, you put all them in, then you lose. Sorry, problems. You've got problems at the back. It's not anyone else's fault.
Yeah, that list even excluded Raheem Sterling and Aguero, so that gives you a sense.
Exactly. I could have kept going.
As for Liverpool, so look, Liverpool probably feel pretty good going into the transfer window. You know, they started very well. Man City lose Laporte. That's something for them to think about, and it's been a nice steady start. No deficit to claw back, which I think is what they're guarding against at all times across this season. The only like blot, and I really barely a blot, I'm sure, because I'm sure this probably happens in training all the time, but was Sadio Mane and Mo Salah. Now, I am sure at some point in your life, you've been jinking by one and then two and then by three and then by four, and you thought, oh, five is on here, and someone has screamed, Nevin, pass the effing ball for God's sake. So Mane's reaction to Salah kind of caught the eye. He was within his rights. Like, Salah on two occasions really should have passed the ball.
I know, no, absolutely, definitely. But was he on a hat trick at that? Was he on, it's got already, hasn't he? So the most important thing is the amount of times that Salah's got the ball in those tight situations, a bunch of players around him, the ball's ended up in the back of the net. And then one time it doesn't. Mm. If he does it regularly, then you're thinking, right, your decision-making is out now. So start doing that a bit more. I think he's given himself lots and lots of grace in all the things he's done over the years. Like, he can score that many goals. He's created that many goals as well. Mm. It was an error. He should have passed it. Was it the worst I've ever seen? Absolutely not.
Sure.
One of the biggest problems you've got, and I'm wary of saying it about Mo Salah, if you've got that second and third player, you've got a lot of things in your mind there. You can buy a few. There's lots of things going around you. You might not have seen that ball on. I'm wary of saying it with Salah because he's got such a phenomenal vision about him. But, you know, if it was De Bruyne, he makes the pass. If it's Silva, David Silva, he makes the pass.
Yeah.
And maybe Salah, because he's much more direct, I want to score, he doesn't make the pass. So it's a tiny little difference. I think, I mean, I've done it many times in the past, and to be honest, it's the thing that annoys me more than anything else. If you get a 70% chance of scoring, and there's a guy there that's got 90%, you pass it.
Yes.
We all know that. And unless you're a centre forward, you do it. And centre forwards don't do that. They don't do that. But we all know that. And because of those two are wide attackers, that's why there was a bit of tension there. And he's made his point. I suspect the next time he'll get the pass.
Yeah, I suspect so. Because Klopp said what you said. He said, I could describe five or six situations where everyone thought, pass it, Mo, pass it. And he didn't. And then he scored. That's the freedom of the player. Maybe it was Mane's reaction which is more interesting. So a few people have looked at the stats to see, is this like Mane at the end of his tether? Like, has something been brewing here for a long time? And you couldn't really say it has. So like, they've looked at over the two seasons of the Salah, Mane, Firmino period. And if you just isolate passes of Salah to Mane and then Mane to Salah. So across these two and a bit years, Salah has passed to Mane 172 times. Mane has passed to Salah 177 times. Basically, completely level. So, you know, that'd kind of allay any fears.
Could I make an argument? I'm always a wee bit wary of stats.
Well,
like
of course.
That.
Yeah, yeah, go on.
Who spends the most time in the ball? I would say Salah.
Yeah, I would think, I'd say dribbles made, probably Salah.
I think so. Salah's got more of the ball. So, in actual fact, he should pass more.
More. Interestingly, if you were to go into chances created, so I guess the more memorable passes and passes of significance, this is where actually, they have Firmino to Mane and Firmino to Salah mixed in all this as well, so they've got the three of them. By a distance, the person who has created the most chances for somebody else is Mane for Salah. Mane has given Salah 43 chances, whereas Salah has given Mane 25. But again, like, these are statistics, so I'm not getting too...
If you think about it, I did some stats of myself last season, season looking at them, and where Salah scored all his goals.
Yeah.
And all his goals were in a really set little position, just outside the six, just around the six-yard box, coming in at the back post. The vast percentage of his goals are scored from there. Sometimes he's made them himself. Quite often he's trapped in the back post for a cross, you know, from the left-hand side, which obviously would be his mate or ex-mate. Whereas you look at when he gets the ball on that side, on the right side coming in, he's coming in his left foot. He's not looking for a cross, he's looking for a shot.
Yeah.
It's a different thing. It really is a different thing. So, you know, if you're Mane going down there, you're a wide player, you might shoot, but you almost always think of a cross as well, which is what he's doing, just a cutback or a cross. And that's where all those passes, or the vast majority of those good passes are. Whereas if you're Salah, you're coming in for the right, you're on your left foot, you're not passing, you're shooting.
Yeah.
That's just the way it is.
Yeah, that's a good point. And then, listen, before we got to go, we won't have time to touch on Manchester United tonight. We'll do that at some stage this week. But The Tammy fan club, Pat, it's growing sizably week on week now. Everyone's in love with this guy at the moment now. It's brilliant. Two goals. My heart swelled for Tammy as I watched him do his thing at the weekend.
Yeah, the thing is, he's scoring a few scruffy ones now, yeah, which I'm pleased about. He had this kind of habit of scoring really good goals, you know, and you thought, oh, cracker, and you're all up for him. And you're thinking, well, you're not going to get 25 a season scoring them, mate. He's getting some scruffy ones. Yeah. And he's getting a few of them as well. And you can see him kind of growing into it. I mean, I said to you last week that I've said for a long time, he's the one. I've always felt he's the one. Now, others will do well, but if there's one that I would have put all the money on, it was him. And you can see B's personality. You're beginning to see his personality coming through now. You like him. And you like him for a number of reasons, because he works his socks off for other people and he'll do the right thing for the team. But he's also a natural goal scorer. And the personality is, you know, he's not walking about there grumpy. It's all about me. He's not running about. Number 27 of my least favourite things in football. Here's a new one. And you know the celebration of goal, and then they point to the back of their shirt as if to say, look at me. Well, you don't get people like Tammy Abraham doing that, right? That's not what he's about. So that's why you like him. Yeah. And say, I'm surprised it's gone this
well,
you know, this well, this quick, and there might be a fall off. But I mean, I think maybe that was almost a secondary thing. The big thing happened in the last 5 minutes for me, which was a real wow factor at Chelsea. They need to keep the game going. You know, they need a centre forward. They bring their centre forward on, and they bring on the kid. They don't bring on Giroud. Mm. And I was like, oh wow, what you bring on an 18-year-old? You know, and I was really, really surprised by that. So, you know, for all the fact that everyone's saying, oh, Frank's bringing on the youngsters, that was youngsters with bells on. That was unbelievable. Okay. So
I hadn't actually noticed that, yeah, from the highlights. Okay,
It's bigger than you think. Right. It's a revolution now. That is a revolution. So
are you taking that then that, like, Lampard is completely secure in his job? He's looking at a 2-3-year thing here.
Either that or his belief and some of the young kids is unbelievable.
Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, you look at benching players, managers make changes, and you think, well, I kind of see that one coming, or I don't see that one coming. How often do they make one? You go, what? That one come from? They bring on, you know, I mean, I know all about Billy Gilmore. I know all about him. Great, great wee player, and he came from Rangers. There's a big hoo ha in Scotland about it because he's our new wee Messi kind of guy. And we're really excited by him, right? So everybody in Scotland knows about him, his disaster and wailing and gnashing of teeth when he left Scotland. And I was telling everybody, oh, he might get a chance in 3 or 4 years, you never know. And that's him getting on now before a World Cup win. It is a stunning, stunning moment. So it didn't pay off because they lost late goal, which is a bit of a disaster for him. But, you know, that was a big, big moment. He must believe in himself, but believe in those kids.
Yeah, very interesting. Pat, thanks a million. Talk to you next week. Cheers.
Cheers, then. See you soon.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. Returning football shirts to the fans. Join the movement today by using hashtag save our shirt.
Now then, welcome back. So a few things to get to before we sign off for the evening. A few moments ago we were speaking to Pat Nevin. North London Derby came up, and yesterday on the show we brought you live commentary of Arsenal 2 Spurs 2. We had Gary Breen there in his Kerry jersey, his Kerry family Gary, alongside Dubliner Stephen Doyle. They got on fine for the afternoon. Afterwards, they spoke about the game, but then more specifically, Thursday night, and we're going to have commentary of this game, by the way, the Republic of Ireland against the Swiss. Here is Gary Breen speaking to Stephen Doyle.
I'm here with former Republic of Ireland international Gary Breen after another thrilling North London derby.
Yeah.
It finished 4-2 last season, 2-2 today here at the Emirates. Was it a fair scoreline, a fair reflection of what we saw on the pitch?
I think it probably sums up that at one period Tottenham were so dominant, and certainly in that second half Arsenal were dominant, so I think it probably does look like a fair result. There was a period there when Tottenham went 2-0 up that you couldn't see anything other than a Spurs win, and likewise when Arsenal got that goal just before half time and a boost for everyone associated with Arsenal, and certainly the crowd who really responded to it. And then they came out second half on the front foot, looked so dangerous. It looked like they were going to get the momentum to get the winner. So I think you're probably right, 2-2 is a good fair scoreline.
still 34 games to play, but Tottenham now 5 from 12 points on offer in the first four matches. Arsenal 7 from 4. So taking that into account, which manager is the happiest coming away from here today? You know, Poch has still got a draw against his big North London rivals away from home.
Yeah, and you think about the fact that they got a draw against Manchester City. I know they were hammered on the day, but still took a point away from the Etihad, which is no mean feat. I think the big disappointment was that defeat at home to Newcastle. Had they won that, which you would expect them to with 80% possession, then they would have been looking pretty. But the dark mood around Tottenham now centres around the fact that they get to the Champions League final. Then they want to recruit and find them high-profile players, the top players, or the elite players who can take you to the next level. They were courted about Dybala, Coutinho, and those players didn't come. And I think that's the frustration more than anything for Pochettino, is that, he can develop these young players as he has done at Tottenham for 5 years, at Southampton before that, but he wants players now that can actually win titles. And I think this Tottenham team is short again.
You feel, and we said it in the post-match, speaking to the lads on the radio, that this is a Tottenham team perhaps in decline?
Well, no, I just think it's a Tottenham team starting again. I think in terms of talking about an end of an era, I believe that that Tottenham team that finished the last season at White Hart Lane, the old White Hart Lane, was so dominant that that was the time to title challenge. But invariably then, what happens is that the other teams start looking at their players and thinking, we want them. Kyle Walker leaves, Dembele leaves, key players. And now you're talking about Eriksen, Alderweireld, Vertonghen, Rose. If they all suddenly leave now, it's up to Pochettino to develop the next batch. Now, and there's no doubt in my mind he can do that. He's a top class manager, but there's going to come a period where he says, I've reached the ceiling here. He's not the type of manager going to stay along. If he thinks that the watermark's been reached, he'll start looking elsewhere.
His opposite number, Unai Emery, he'll be, I suppose, happy with some things he saw today, unhappy with others. Mm-hmm. One thing maybe disappointing him is the final product of Nicolas Pepe, which we mentioned or we alluded to a few times in commentary today. How does he sort that out? How does he fix it?
Just work. Just working on the training ground, trying to get that composure into his game. He's got immense ability, notably that pace, that dribbling ability, and it certainly scares your opposition. If you think of him in a front three now with Lacazette, we talked about Lacazette as not a 6 foot three, 6 foot four centre forward, but he's got that physical presence. Take that ball into tight areas, can roll centre half. So that occupies two at times because you're reluctant to allow your centre half defensive partner to get rolled by him and not be covering him. So if you are covering him, suddenly there's space out wide. Aubameyang exploits it brilliantly. Pepe has to get that in his game. But if he just looks at how clinical and how ruthless Aubameyang is, watch him in training and I'm expecting him to improve greatly.
The diamond was the formation he went with last week in Liverpool. Harry Keary, someone might say. Today he went with the midfield three behind that attacking three. I would guess, though, it's not the last we've seen of the diamond. I think Emery's one of those managers, he kind of thinks about the opposition and then puts a team out depending on how it goes. So, and then, of course, you have to think about how do you get Ceballos into the team, because he made such a difference here today. So which do you think is their best formation?
Well, listen, I don't think there's one formation that's their best. And I think with Emery, who's known to keep changing it all the time, and he's a thinker. He's not like Wenger, who literally says to his team, we play one way, let the opposition adjust. He's very thorough. He works out where he thinks the opposition are weakness. Now, I agree in terms of the tactics to try and beat Liverpool. In a diamond, you're looking to get control of that midfield area, get your players on the ball, and then create space, even playing out from the back in a way that they did up at Anfield, to suck Liverpool on and then use the pace of Pepe and Aubameyang. But if you ain't got players who can play out from the back, which they proved they haven't, because they gave the ball away 13 times in the defensive third against Liverpool, who's so clinical, and if you don't have midfielders who can keep the ball as well as a Barcelona doing a diamond, then you're going to give it back to the opposition. And then that diamond can't get out to stop Robertson, to stop Trent Alexander-Arnold getting forward from their forward position. So it's all in good identifying that's the tactics to beat Liverpool. Yes, I have no doubt they are. But you don't have the players to execute it. So that's what he has to work out. And that's the frustration. I think so many of these Arsenal fans now are looking and thinking, we love this manager, he's doing great, but is he repeating the same old mistakes? And that performance at Liverpool, bearing in mind how much Arsenal have been put to the sword up at Anfield over the years, suggests that he is making the same mistakes.
Now, one of my favourite things to ask former centre-backs like yourself, or Kenny Cunningham, good old school centre-backs, my favourite topic to ask you about is David Luiz.
I've said this and it's been well documented. I think he's a fabulous footballer, I really do. In terms of his physique, he's aggressive, his physical presence back there, there's no doubt, can step into midfield, make passes, rarely gets beaten for pace. But having said all that, I still don't think he thinks like a centre-back. And I think even when you come to Arsenal, you're judged by the highest standards. You're on about Tony Adams, Martin Keown, Sol Campbell, Gallas, these type of guys. He's nowhere near that level. And the difference is that Emery said, I brought Luiz in because he's a serial winner. Yes, he is. Look at his CV in terms of what he won at Chelsea. But you have to work out why he won so many things at Chelsea. It's because they protected him. Notably, Antonio Conte played him in the middle of a back three. So when he does go on his little mazes like he does, he's still got two centre-halves behind him. This is a porous defence. At the best of times, he's not the one who's going to plug it.
And he doesn't really have other centre-backs. Like Socrates is obviously there as well. And he has played a back three last year, Unai Emery.
Yeah.
But he doesn't really have enough players there to do it, does he, to play a back three this year?
I mean, he played a back three, I think, 26 occasions last season. So he does flip between both of them. What they do have Arsenal is they have Holding coming back from injury, a bad injury. But he's still a player who is a reliable centre-half. Now, I know at times he's been hung out to dry, notably against Liverpool in that first game of the season a few seasons back, but he's getting better. He's put Chambers back there, which is a surprise to me, bearing in mind that he's been playing centre midfield in a relegated Fulham team. So he doesn't look like he's the answer. And of course you lose Koscielny, who's such a key player here when he was at the peak of his game. So they do have issues, but I ultimately think that Arsenal's best form of defence is attack. And I think we saw that today, playing on the front foot, making it difficult for Tottenham. I don't think Arsenal are good enough to sit in and defend in a good defensive structure.
Do you think Arsenal will finish in the top four this season?
Yeah, I think they've got potential to do that, bearing in mind that they were so poor away from home last year, which is something that's followed Emery from Valencia and from Seville. He wasn't particularly good away from home in terms of his records, and not defensively either. So I think he's better off just playing on the front for Arsenal, and he has the players to do that.
Before we go, Gary, there's a big match for Mick McCarthy. And thanks very much there, Squire. There's a big match for Mick McCarthy, the Republic of Ireland manager, to deal with on Thursday. Ireland playing Switzerland, one of our big group rivals for the Euro 2020 qualifiers. Now, just on a couple of news lines. First, Kieran Westwood's had to pull out. James McCarthy's had to pull out. Matt Doherty's had to pull out. You know, I suppose there is goalkeepers there that can stand in for Kieran, albeit him not being the first choice goalkeeper. That'll be Darren Randolph. But the big ones, I suppose, are Matt Doherty and James McCarthy. McCarthy next, but Matt Doherty first. Although he wouldn't be first choice, we know Seamus Coleman will be. Is he a big loss for a match like this?
Well, I think all three of those players are. You're quite right to identify their qualities, but Mick's been consistent about this. If you're not physically right, and if you've not played enough games, you just won't be selected. It's as simple as that. He won't take any chances. It's too big a game. And he'll believe, and he'll give the message to those guys who are fit, who are raring to go, have been playing league football, that this is your chance. Take it. And that'll be the message. And I think a lot of those players were looking forward to this game. It's a massive game. Of course it is. We started so well. But we're under no illusions. This is a tough game. And these are the games that decide whether or not you qualify. You have to remember how consistent, how dogged this Swiss team are. It's a tough challenge.
The loss of James McCarthy, but you know, I suppose James McCarthy, the injury profile he's had for the last couple of years, you really can't blame him in wanting to get some games under his belt. I know even one of our colleagues, David Snade, went to see Crystal Palace play against Sheffield United, and he said when he came onto the pitch, although he was trying really hard, you could see he was feeling a little bit like, you know, he didn't look entirely fit.
Well, there's a huge difference between being fit and being match fit, and this is the problem that James will have, that he'll have done all the hard yards in terms of recovering from his injury, so he'll have done his pre-season, which is great. But that's that fitness, and you're right, it comes with games, and Mick will know that. He's so experienced as a manager, he'll know he hasn't played enough games, and it's too big a chance. But we have to protect James. We've built him for so long as a top player, and he's been so unfortunate with injuries, and his time will come, there's no doubt about it. But I just think, as Mick probably does, that this game has come too soon.
We could take some huge positives though from Sheffield United and the way they performed at the weekend. I know you were commentating on that game. Callum Robinson, Enda Stevens down the left side, they look really, really good.
Looks so comfortable at that level, which is the big thing, because initially when you come up with a promoted team, you're not playing that level before. At times you can be guilty of putting these Premier League players on a pedestal. You've watched them on telly and you think they're going to be so much better than you. But I think that Sheffield United have a way of playing and have a manager who makes these players believe that they are good enough. And certainly, Callum Robinson getting his first Premier League goal at a time when he missed a good opportunity, which would have been preying on his mind, gets a great goal, then a brilliant creates the chance then for the equaliser. And you think about Enda Stevens at left back, he looks so good. He was driving forward. Chelsea were really struggling to contain him. So they will be turning up full of beans. The only thing about Enda Stevens, he might be delighted that the dubs hung in there. I know that John Egan will be devastated that Kerry didn't make it count.
One of your Kerry cousins. Well, I think John might be looking for a spot there beside Shane Duff. Actually, would you think him and Shane Duff, he might be the centre back pairing, or who are you going to put in there?
Well, I think, listen, in terms of John Egan and what he's done throughout his career, I've been so impressed with him, seeing him as a player, young player at Sunderland, got a dreadful injury. Then I saw him have to drop down the leagues, went to Gillingham, got in the League One Team of the Year, and he really, really impressed me. And he's a centre-half now at 26, but has played so much football, then goes to Brentford and gets his move to Sheffield United, and he's a key player. Mick will like him, there's no doubt about that, but Mick will know, and this will be the message to all those players who have got the shirts. You've got it, it's up to you to keep it. And I've no doubt that Richard Keogh will be... He won't let that shirt go very easily, no doubt.
Absolutely. And just finally, Shaqiri out for the Swiss. Yeah. Is he a big loss for them?
Well, he is in terms of if he's firing in all cylinders, but I don't think that they're that bothered that he's not doing it. I think that they're probably thinking they've got quality elsewhere. There's other players who have not played enough league football in terms of what Mick's done for the Swiss team that the manager said, no, you're not ready. Likewise, they're welcoming back two or three players that they didn't have in that Nation League. I know they've only played a couple of games now. They've got it all to do, but they're a very well-disciplined, organised team, and it'll be a tough challenge.
Let's try and get some All-Ireland final tickets, Gary.
Oh, yeah. Can't wait.
There you are, Gary Breen and Stephen Doyle speaking after the game in the Emirates. And again, we have commentary of Ireland against Switzerland on Thursday night here on Off the Ball. Our football coverage is with thanks to Paddy Power. If you want any and all information on responsible gambling, visit dunlewy.net, dunlewy.net.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. Returning football shirts to the fans. Join the movement today by using hashtag SaveOurShirt.
Now, welcome back. So if you're just tuning in, we've heard from Pat Nevin this evening. We've also had Gary Breen talking to Stephen Doyle. And before we sign off, ahead of Tom Dunn, we have Seamus Coleman for you. Big week for Ireland. We brought you Everton Wolves as well yesterday on the show. Nathan Murphy alongside Brian Kerr there. A 3-2 win for Everton. And afterwards, Nathan caught up with the Irish captain. They invariably got talking about Ireland, Switzerland and Matt Doherty.
Seamus, that was a thoroughly enjoyable game to commentate on. I suppose it's a thoroughly enjoyable game to play in when you come out on the winning side.
Yeah, when you come out on the winning side, it was tough there for a while. You know, they're a good team. We knew they played Thursday night and they made a few changes, but I think they're a team that knows whoever comes in, they know what they need to do, they know their style of play. So it was always going to be a tough game, but the manager made sure that we worked on our balance at all times, to make sure the two centre-halves were never left 2v2 with their strikers. So we worked hard on the game, and then probably were disappointed with the two goals that were conceded, but look, we showed a good side to us today, and that was coming back and winning the game. Whereas maybe last season at this stage we might have just 2-2, or you never know, they could have went up the other end and scored, and we felt sorry for ourselves. So it's a good sign,
because that's something you talk about consistently over the last year, club our country, is character and a bit of resilience in players. Like, is that sort of proof that things are very much heading in the right direction?
Yeah, I think even, you know, I watched it from home on Wednesday night when we played Lincoln, and obviously people would expect us to go there and win easily, and we made it difficult that night, but I think the lads showed great character, great fight, great spirit, and you know, it goes a long way. It's so important, you know, that team, the Irish team that got to the Euros, it was built on that, and for me it's massive. And then when you've got some top quality players like Richarlison and Lucas to pick that cross out later on, you know, you've got a good recipe for success.
Richarlison got his couple of goals and took his match-winning goal really well. You were straight over to him at full time and seemed to be a few words. What were you saying to him? What was the message you were giving him?
No, just well done. He put in a hell of a shift. You know, he came back, he helped me as much as he could, and he just really put in a shift for the club. And I think you seen on Wednesday when he celebrated, he held the front of the jersey instead of the back, and that shows what he's about. He's not about individual plaudits, and he works so hard for the team. And when he scores a couple of goals, you're delighted for him, because he's not just one of them that maybe will hang around and be happy with two goals. He works extremely hard for the lads.
You're heading off to Dublin tonight now to link up with the Ireland squad. How are you physically?
Yeah, I'm fine. I'll be tired tomorrow probably after that game, but look, you're probably sick hearing it, but when you put on that green jersey, the energy just comes straight back into your body. It's an amazing feeling, and it's something that I never take for granted. And once again, we're going there with good confidence. I know we could say that we've had the easy part of the draw so far, and now it's coming to the business end, but we're confident. We're playing at the Viva against a good side, but we're looking forward to it, and the manager make sure that we go for it.
What do you want to see? Because I know you often talk about being brave in possession. I think even after the last couple of games you said again players need to be braver in possession. Can you do that in 3 days on the training ground, or do you just need to go out there and give 100% and try and get slight improvements?
I think you just got to relish playing for your country. You know, I seen yesterday Andy Stevens, you know, going past a few people, not making someone and putting the ball in the box for Callum Robinson to score his first Premier League goal. So we've got to take that belief that we've got good players, good Premier League players. John Egan's playing, you know, Shane Duffy obviously didn't play yesterday, but he's playing well. So we've got good players, but you know, when you go there and the pressure's on, that's when you need to stand up and be counted, and that's myself included. But we'll go there, we'll play in the front foot, and we'll really look forward to it.
And it seems you're not going to have to put up with a week of can yourself and Matt Doherty play together, or which of you it should be, because Nuno was saying it looks as though he's going to have to miss out on the international trip.
Yeah, I'm disappointed for Matt, really. You know, after the season he had last year, he was unbelievable, probably. As I said before, he was the best right wing back in the Premier League last season. And, you know, he's just picked up a few niggles this year, and it's very frustrating. I've had it myself, where you picked him up in pre-season and it's hard to get going again. So, you know, we'd obviously love to have him with us, but if that is the case, that he's definitely not coming, then we wish him a speedy recovery and get him back fit as soon as possible, because he's a great player.
It is obviously it's an unusual setup with the change of manager coming down the track, but you're pretty much halfway through Mick McCarthy's reign in charge. Is that something you're aware of?
Not really. I don't think as players we can think too much about what's going on in the background or what changeover is going to happen. You know, it's still, we've got a massive job to qualify for these Euros. So as players, you're a bit selfish at times. You just see one game ahead at a time, and you're playing for your country, and obviously we're playing for the manager. But we just want 3 points, and we want to qualify, and the manager wants to qualify, and it'll be great for him if we can qualify and do well.
And the news that the man from across Stanley Park, Sheridan Shaqiri, seems to be stepping away from international football for a little while. He's not going to be involved for Switzerland. Obviously a boost.
Yeah, he's a great player, very talented player, and that'll be a boost if he's not playing. But also, you know, we do know they're a top nation, and it's going to be hard. But as I said, just really looking forward to the game, and I think that needs to be the atmosphere amongst players and fans and staff alike. Just embrace it, get the Aviva rocking, and go for it.
All right, enjoy the week.
Thank you very much.
There you are, Seamus Coleman. We'll be hearing more from him across the week, no doubt. And again, we have that game live next Thursday, or this Thursday, Ireland against Switzerland on the way this week. That is pretty much us done for the evening. OTBAM back tomorrow, 7:30, all our social channels. We'll be here in the radio at 7:00 in the evening. And up next is Tom Dunn.
With guilt-like eyes.